Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the region's only locally produced public affairs program. Every Saturday at this time, Bedford County Speaks introduces community leaders, interesting topics, and people making a difference in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is presented exclusively by News Talk 1310 WBFD. Now, here's your host, Lloyd Broach.
Good morning and welcome to Bedford County Speaks. Today's program is brought to you by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru up on Route 220 in Bedford and Homewood at Springhouse Estates. Just for the fun of it, we decided to do something a little different in the first month of the new year. We're going to look back and hear some of our excellent guests that joined us in 2017. So stay tuned as Bedford County Speaks continues.
This is Bill Turner, the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
At Homewood at Springhouse Estates, Independence Day is every day. Executive Director Mary Grattan says new cottages are coming.
We have 11 new cottages that are being built in the lower part of Homewood. It's for independent living, so you just come in, move in, and you get all the services that you would on the main campus area.
Visit Homewood at Springhouse Estates today and see what's new, or call them anytime at 623-0349. For Homewood at Springhouse Estates, where every day is Independence Day.
This is District Attorney Bill Higgins. Let's head back to Bedford County Speaks, right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Let's start with Olga Herbert of the Lincoln Highway Association, who gave us a fascinating look of the history of America's first transcontinental highway, which came right through Bedford.
Well, I think I wanted to start today by getting some history on the highway itself. Now, last time I was here, you were very gracious to let me buy a couple of books about the highway and the whole idea. But 1913, this is practically prehistory when it comes to cars. What got this off the ground in 1913?
What got it going were, it was a little bit self-serving because Carl Fisher and Henry Joy, who were the co-founders of the Lincoln Highway, they were the movers and shakers to ignite this enthusiasm across America. The one fella, Carl Fisher, he had a background. He owned the company that produced headlights to cars. So we know how successful that would have been.
Right.
He was also an entrepreneur. He and his brother had a bicycle shop. So they were already into the Good Roads movement in the late 1800s. And then Henry Joy, he was the president of the Packard Motor Car Company. So it's hard to believe, but in 1903, there were very, very few paved roads in America. So while only the rich could afford some of the vehicles at that time in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and as the story goes, they were at a dinner party in Detroit, center of the world for automotive, and they had nice cars, and they're like, we have no place to drive these cars. This is terrible that we have all these, you know, these beautiful, beautiful automobiles, high end, and there are no good roads to drive them in. So let's build a road before it's too late. Let's let Americans see America first. There was a little bit of interest at that time of traveling across the ocean to Europe and travel there. So they were very patriotic in the sense we have to have the good roads for them to drive. And certainly the trains were well used. I mean, but again, it's limiting because you have to go to the train station. You have to leave when the train leaves, you know, and so this sort of pioneering spirit that Americans had even back then, it's like, no, we want to go when we want to go. We want to go where we want to go. And so it really, and it was the first road. There was no government money in the Lincoln Highway. This was all grassroots. And when you think now, even myself, when I'm trying to communicate with a lot of people along our corridor, I can use email, I can use the telephone. I mean, I can communicate in so many ways. I just drive there myself and tell them something. And back then, they had, they called them consuls. And these were sort of like ambassadors. Like Pennsylvania would have had probably a half a dozen ambassadors in different key points. And so they communicated with these ambassadors, these consuls. And they were the ones that tried to rev up the local communities. They also used a concept called acetylene mile. Okay, Lincoln Highway Association, let's just pave them 1 mile in each state. And when they see how awesome it is, then they'll say, "We got to do this. Let's continue it."
I have to do all the other miles.
Yeah. So Pennsylvania, I don't think, had a seedling mile. Maybe we were already on board. I don't know. A couple months ago, we had some women here touring our museum, and they were funny. They said, I was telling them about, it started at Times Square and came down through New Jersey and over, through Pennsylvania and all the way to San Francisco. And they said, if two women were in charge, we would have drawn a straight line from New York City to San Francisco. What was the point of coming down through New Jersey? And I said, I think politics played a big role then too, just like as it does now with a lot of different routes. Still, it's a great highway. I mean, it's amazing. The more I learn about it, it just really blows my mind. But it's still a little known story. A couple of years ago, I went to New York City because I wanted to find where is the Eastern Terminus? Where's the sign?
Yeah.
I probably asked 20 people. Policemen, just the Chamber of Commerce. No one could tell me where it was. And then I thought, I'm not leaving until I can find this sign. Well, most of our highway signs around here in Pennsylvania, they're maybe 9 feet off the ground, so for clearance for people walking and everything. Finally, I found it. It's if you're at Times Square, there is one.
Oh.
And it's a red sign with white lettering. It's 15 feet high. I mean, I've never seen a sign. No wonder no one knows where it is.
So is it in Times Square?
It is. And then Times Square was my first time to New York City. So that was another.
What did it say?
Lincoln Highway, Eastern Terminus.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I've been in New York City a zillion times. I never knew it was there. I'll be darned.
Look to the sky. You'll find it.
Later in the month, we spoke to the new pastor of the region's most historic Catholic Church, St. Thomas the Apostle. St. Thomas just celebrated its 200th year, founded by Father Demetrius Gallitzin. St. Thomas is one of the oldest of its kind in western Pennsylvania. According to Father Richard, that's saying something, because there just aren't too many Catholics to begin with.
When I interviewed Father Duza, your predecessor, about, a year and a half ago or so forth, he explained to me that only 5% of Bedford County are Catholics. And I just came from an area where 55% of the county was Catholics. This is quite a shock to me. So for this parish to succeed the way it has with a really small minority of people is quite a story. And I wanted to have you tell us a little bit, is Catholicism in the decline, you think?
Well, yes and no. Bedford County has never been very Catholic, if you go back and study, just for a lot of variety of historical reasons. And that's a blessing and a curse on some level. I come from Johnstown as part of Cambria County, which Cambria County is something like 70% Catholic, at least on paper. I mean,
really?
It doesn't mean everybody practices. But so I came from a very Catholic area growing up. Pretty much all my friends were Catholic. I don't know if I knew somebody who was non-Catholic. I did know some, and I became friends, but it more was towards high school. And so anyway, but as you mentioned at the beginning in your introduction, I'm not a stranger to this area. I actually, one of the things I mentioned when I first came here last summer at St. Thomas was my only maybe claim to fame in the end when the Lord calls me out of this life someday is I may be the only priest who ever has been pastor of the four local Catholic parishes in this area, which are, of course, St. Thomas here in Bedford, St. John the Evangelist in Everett, Our Lady of Seven Dolors in Beans Cove down by Clearville on the Maryland border, and then St. John the Baptist, which is in Somerset County, but it's only a mile into Somerset County down in New Baltimore.
I had quite forgotten about Everett.
So I'm very familiar.
So you've got the trifecta of churches here.
So I've been in Bedford, or in and about Bedford County for going on 7-8 years now, so I've gotten pretty familiar with it. The one thing that is really striking around here, particularly if you're here in Bedford and Everett, is because the Catholic population has always been kind of a minority, they've had to kind of come together to really work together. And as a result, the parishes here at St. Thomas and in Everett are probably stronger than a lot of the other parishes in the region. Because you have to kind of stick together. When you're in an area that there's a bunch of Catholics in, it's very easy to kind of figure, someone else will do it. Because there's a lot of other people who are in the same boat. Where here, if you don't do it, if you don't help, there's nobody. And so as a beautiful result, we have two very nice communities here.
One of the things that a parishioner said to me, I thought when I first came here, it was a little shocking, but when I thought about it, he was absolutely correct. He said, this is really a great parish, but we're kind of like the Jews. And what he meant was, of course, that there was a tremendous minority of people as compared to all of the other Protestant religions that are here.
I hear it from parishioners. Right. I hear these questions that people have. So it's out and about. And a lot of it is, again, like you said, there's no malice involved. It's just ignorance. It's just not being exposed to it. Because, again, most of the region is not Catholic. So it's not like people grew up with this and were exposed to it. So it's kind of foreign. It's like maybe in a way like studying a foreign language, you have to actually make the effort to inquire, like, what does this actually mean? What does this institution actually teach? And if you look at it the wrong way, it's almost like you Catholics think you're better than everybody. It's kind of arrogant. You know, you guys think you know the way. And the reality is, though, I remember one of our late popes, who's now a canonized saint of the church, St. John Paul II, who had such an impact on the world. He said once, when people asked him that, and he had a beautiful response, he said, look, it's a question of just being honest. It's not that we're arrogant. It's not that we're trying to jam this down your throat. It's just we see this as kind of a treasure that we look and we can trace ourselves back all the way to Jesus. St. Peter, of course, one of the apostles, is considered the first pope of the church, the first leader, all the way down now to Pope Francis. Well, however, and there's 200 and some in history. And we just see this as God has given us this treasure. And it's our job as Catholics, first of all, to live it ourselves with humility and integrity, but then to try to expose others to it, to try to welcome them in. And then, of course, we leave it up to God and the Holy Spirit to lead them where they need to go. But it's not the wrong way to look at it is to say, hey, you guys think you're better than us. It's more just, hey, let's look into this and see what did the Lord actually establish and what's he calling us to?
Our guest is Father Richard Tomkowski. Father Richard is the pastor of the St. Thomas the Apostle School and Parish here in Bedford. One of the big challenges in our own faith is bringing people back. I find often the harshest critics of the Catholic faith are former Catholics. I just read an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. This guy did a scathing article on the Archbishop of Philadelphia, Archbishop Chaput. It says in the article he went to Catholic schools, went to Catholic college, and though he didn't go to Mass much now, he's still a Catholic. And we never hear this kind of vitriol from people from Protestants or any other faith for that matter, like we do from our own Catholics. Is it tough to bring these people back? And when they do come back, do they come back with a vengeance?
It's a real challenge. I remember, like you said, reading this article recently. I remember reading something a couple years ago that they did some big Pew study or something. They studied religious trends in America. Even though it's a minority, we're a minority in the country, too. The Roman Catholicism is the biggest denomination in America as far as percentage of people. But the second highest percentage of people are ex-Catholic. And then after that, it's something, you know, Lutherans or somebody. But there's a lot of variables why you have these sizable number of ex-Catholics. One of the things that we've run into, and it's not just the Catholic Church, I think it's churches in general, is when American society kind of, as some would say, went off the rails from our perspective spiritually in the 60s and 70s, a lot of people who grew up in that time got caught up in that rebellion against authority and questioning of everything. And as a result, a lot of the young people in particular at that time either were not well educated in the faith or turned against it because they thought somehow it was holding them down as humans or something.
We'll return with our Bedford County Speaks New Year's special when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. We hope you're enjoying this week's Bedford County Speaks. We're pleased to sponsor this community effort every week. Sometimes people ask us how we do business. Well, it's simple. When a family firm like us has been around for over 100 years, you learn a lot. For example, we know you don't care for haggling, so instead, we discount our vehicles up front to remove all the guessing. We also pay our sales consultants on volume rather than on the price of the car or truck. That way, everyone works to get you the vehicle you want instead of the one we may want to sell. sell you. Thomas Chevrolet Subaru offers transparent financing with protection options to fit your budget. In addition, when you buy a car or truck from us, you get free state inspections for life, free car washes for life, and great warranties, which remove all the worry. And we'll even buy your trade for cash. So stop by our showroom today and check out our beautiful supply of Chevrolet cars, tough Chevy trucks, and those fabulous worry-free Subarus. That's the Thomas Promise. To learn more, visit us on Route 220 or thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Carla Amato of the Bedford Banjo Shop. Listen for Bedford County Speaks with Lloyd Roach, Saturdays at 8:30 a.m., right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to Lloyd Roach and Bedford County Speaks.
Last June, Don Schwartz, Bedford County's Director of the Planning Commission, explained that regional planning and cooperation can help our area grow and prosper.
Right. It's very important. We do have a lot of projects already that cross county lines. We're doing a, through Terry Stacy, my office, Community Development Block Grant Project, Wood Broadtop Wells Joint Municipal Authority. It's $1 million water and sewer job.
Yeah.
That crosses county lines. Lloyd, you're well aware of the Pike to Bike Project. If that gets off the ground, that's Bedford and Fulton.
Yes.
You know, our transportation network crosses county lines. I told you we're involved in a three-county solid waste agency, Bedford is. We already cooperate, and the planners do, a lot. And we meet regularly in Altoona. So we're very excited by this idea. And I've been around a long time. I'm kind of an old guy, I guess. And
but your hair still is red.
Well, I mean, sort of red.
It's not really as
sort
gray
of red.
As
not
say
like
it was.
Used to be, Lloyd. But certainly having a quote-unquote book with the stamp and seal with six counties on it approving anything when it comes time to look for funding, when it comes time for help from people, it's going to be immensely powerful, more powerful than one county, than to have the seal of approval from six counties saying, we want this, we want to do this, we are behind this, whatever that topic may be. And it's just going to lend a lot more, frankly, political power.
Are you, in your comprehensive plan, are you projecting the addition of more zoning in many of these townships?
I wouldn't see zoning in Bedford County. It's never in Bedford County. It's never really been an issue. It's never been brought up to me. There has been some talk recently about consolidation of municipalities.
Right.
I don't know how far that will go. Obviously, people treasure their independence. So I can't speak for anybody here in the county. But if not a consolidation of municipalities, at least consolidation of services.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that's already going on.
Yeah. Well, the cops.
But as money gets tighter and tighter, it's going to have to happen. So the issue of cooperation has been one of the priorities identified by our committee. And you can define that any way you wish. It may not be a physical consolidation, but certainly, you know, with an aging population and a population that's not growing very quickly or is actually shrinking, I'm sure there'll be some consolidation of some services. And again, it's already going on. It just may be accelerated.
Well, a recent development in Bedford County, probably in the last 10, 15 years, is the concept of having a building inspector. So is that something that is going to be regionalized as well?
Well, actually already is. BCAM, the Association, Bedford County Association of Municipalities, already does that through services through one contracted entity that you know, where they all do, they do the inspection for all of those municipalities.
Gotcha.
Now, it's not every municipality, it's
right.
Most municipalities. So that's already going on, and it's been going on, and that's certainly a way to save money because, face it, a township with 200 people in it, they can't afford to have their own inspections,
right.
You know, inspectors and things. So that there, if people don't think that there's cooperation already ongoing, they're wrong. It is. It's already happening. It's just a matter of bringing it to the fore and trying it in more and different ways.
Now, you mentioned before we went on the air that you're hopeful that Bedford, sooner or later, probably more sooner than later, is going to start experiencing some growth again,
some real growth.
And if it does that not bring all of those those situations with it that kind of drags in the zoning and kind of drags in all the building inspections and maybe even more some more government regulation on things people do because there's more of us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think the pattern, you know, the county, at least according to the Census Bureau, is slightly declining in population and has been for perhaps 10 to 15 years. But if you look to the counties to the east, that pattern has stopped. And most recently, I think for the last estimate for Fulton for the last year or so has actually shown an increasing population. So I think that county is starting to grow again. And I just think I call it the wave. I think the wave is going to hit here if the county's prepared for it. I don't think it's going to be an overwhelming wave, Lloyd, where there'll be the need for all these services immediately. But, you know, over time, obviously over a period of 10 to 20, 25 years, hopefully the population will pick up. And then, yes, there'll be the need for some more services. But it's not going to be, say, like Southeast Pennsylvania, Jersey, where there was this huge, we were talking about earlier, just bam, it hit 20, 30 years ago, and you didn't know what to do with it down there. I think it'll be slower and more gradual, but I'll keep my fingers crossed that it is going to happen.
During an emergency exercise called Field Day, two ham radio operators, Steve Worm, call sign KE3ZT, and Steve Elliott, call sign KA3UDR, told us how they got started in this interesting hobby, which enables its licensed operators to talk all over the world and provide public service as well. Steve Worm says it all started for him as a Boy Scout.
Boy Scouts, electrical merit badge, one of the things we made was what's called a cat's whisker radio receiver made with a crystal and a diode connected to a speaker, and that just amazed me and started me off. And later on, I got a receiver kit with three tubes in it when I was a teenager and built that, and once I got it up and running and a good antenna, it just brought the world into me, and it just amazed me. It still amazes me.
When was that? Circa what?
Circa mid-60s.
Okay. So do you think a young person could still build a crystal set?
I'm sure they can.
Yeah. Because everyone's interested in computers. We're going to talk about that in a second. Steve Elliott, you've been a ham also a long time. What got you interested in all of this?
Well, you know, it's similar to KE3ZT's story, but I'm a little bit older. Crystal set, my dad, I evidently had built a couple when he was younger, but we went out and traipsed along a railroad track and found a crystal that he said, this will do it. And we actually built one, cat's hair and our whisker and a crystal.
So you were like the real thing. I mean, Steve Worm did it with a diode, but God, you went out and mined your own crystal.
Yeah, my dad always picked one
from the railroad track.
Dad, I evidently had done it before, but we got it working, and we put in a good ground system. We run an antenna from the house out to the barn. We lived in the country, had a small farm, and I'd pick up. I grew up in just outside Wilmington, Ohio, Clinton County, Ohio, but WLW out of Cincinnati, and would come in on it. You'd take the cat whisker and move it around on the crystal a little bit. And I think WLS, Chicago, there was a station out of New Orleans that would come in real good. And it just utterly amazed me.
Clearly, one of the best programs we did in 2017 was with the Bloody Run Historical Society, with two young ladies named Barb Hummel and Barb Miller. Barb Miller was granted the Historian of the Year for her work at the Bloody Run Historical Society, and the stories they tell are priceless. So, the Bloody Run Historical Society does a lot more than trains, do they not?
Oh, yeah. We're also a museum for the town of Everett. If you look around, you can see the displays of the different old businesses. We also honor our soldiers, our Civil War soldiers, our two Congressional Medal of Honor for one little town to have two.
Well, I've noticed that, and I just couldn't get over the fact that you're right. A little town, you have two congressional medal recipients, which is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And if could you give me like a little tour around this room to tell us like what is some of the exhibits here that people really like?
Oh, okay. Let's see. The first over here, you'll see a cart-like table. That was old Doc Sipes's operating table. Above him, you'll see a picture of old Doc Sipes, and he had his own hospital.
Now, wait a minute. Did they call him old Doc Sipes?
Well, I did.
They didn't call him that, did they? Really?
They called him
Most
Doc.
Most people did, yes.
Old Doc Sipes.
Old Doc Sipes.
So he was local doctor, I guess.
He was a local doctor, mm-hmm. surgeon, very good surgeon.
So you have his equipment right here in this room?
We have his operating table here.
And may I say, I had my appendix out on that table when I was 6 years old, at least. Yes.
I'm not sure you wanted to tell me that, but I guess we're going to learn anyway.
Everybody needs to know that.
Okay, so continue, Barb.
Okay, and then next to the operating table is an old dentist drill. The small display case next to that has bottles in it from the Everett Bottling Company. And that was started in about the year 1910, maybe. My grandfather, C.D. Sponsler, started the Everett Bottling Company, and he bottled pop right up the street here, about a quarter of a mile.
So he bottled soft drinks right here
in Everett? He bottled soft drinks right here in Everett.
And what kind of products were they?
They were like orange and root beer, and you know, they. I've never seen a cola. I'm not saying there wasn't, but it was just flavors.
Well, I miss them already.
And he finally sold the bottling company around 1915 because he couldn't raise his family on what he made at the bottling company because they only drank pop during the summer months. They didn't drink in the winter. So he bought the grocery store that's set about a half a mile from where we are now. It was called the Tecumseh General Store at the time. And it went on to be my family's business for 100 years. It started in 1915, and we closed it in 2015.
Boy, that is a wonderful story, and this company was family-owned the whole time.
It was family-owned the whole time. My dad took over in 1942. Grandpa supposedly said that he had enough money saved to retire. Didn't realize he was going to live up into his 80s, 20 years over what he planned.
And he worked the whole time?
Grandpa... No, he didn't work the whole time, but he did come down. He'd come every morning, sweep the floors and sweep the sidewalks.
I call that working. Yeah. You can't get that kind of work out of people today. What
no,
are you talking
you can't.
About?
No, yeah, I can't.
Right? Our guests are the ladies of the Bloody Run Historical Society, Barb Hummel, and, of course, the Historian of the Year for 2017, Barb Miller. And we're hearing some wonderful stories about this building. We are in the old freight station of the Everett train station, and next to us is the actual passenger train station. If you have never been here, my wife and I came here. One of the first things we saw when we came to Everett. In fact, I remember we came here actually before we moved here. We were just touring around Bedford County, and we saw the sign that said train station. I didn't even know they had a railroad, much less a train station. So we came up the hill here and saw this. I have to ask you something. Right behind this building, as I came in today, there's a great big, looks like a factory behind us. What was that?
It was originally Gibney's Planing Mill. Was sold out to the Fore family and became Everett Hardwood Lumber Company, which is still, I think, familiar with most people in Bedford County.
So it started out as a planing mill. Do you have any idea when that was built? Was it in this in the 20th century?
Oh, yes.
I hope you enjoyed our review of 2017. We sure had a lot of fun putting it together. We look forward to another great year in 2018. So stay tuned next Saturday at 8:30 right here on Bedford County Speaks.
Thanks for listening to Bedford County Speaks. This program is heard every Saturday at this time over News Talk 1310 WBFD. If you would like to hear this program again, visit BedfordCountySpeaks.com and click Listen Here. Bedford County Speaks is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310. If you or your organization would like to appear on the show, visit our website, BedfordCountySpeaks.com, for contact information. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.